I think it's Gaff Boys on the far side of the ground. So they came together.
Let's have a look. Screen.
Oh, oh, wow. Well, this is no good. This is broken jaw territory.
Fremantle players have just realised this. They've just either seen a replay or at least been made aware of what's happened to Andrew Brayshaw, and they've gone to Gaff. Brayshaw bleeding from the mouth.
Well, the fact that he hasn't taken his mouth guard out would suggest that his teeth are potentially loose, or he's having a real issue with his jaw, because otherwise you'd think the mouth guard would have come out.
I'm Melissa Caston.
I'm James Patterson.
This is Just Cases. In the Australian Football League, or AFL, West Coast player Andrew Gaff has been suspended for 8 matches for punching his opponent off the ball.
18-year-old Fremantle player Andrew Brayshaw had to have surgery on a broken jaw, and he's got 3 broken teeth. So his first season of the game has come to a pretty abrupt and violent end.
The hit has prompted calls for all sorts of things, from a red card system to criminal charges and even jail time. Dr. Eric Windholtz from Monash Law School says we need to learn a thing or two from a court case back in the 1980s. It involved the criminal prosecution of a man held by many to be the greatest footballer to have ever played the game.
So, Eric, before we get into that case from 1985 involving Lee Matthews, let's start with what happened just recently, just this week. So for the people who haven't seen the footage from the match, can you describe what happened on field between Andrew Gaff and Andrew Brayshaw?
Well, the first thing to say is when I was watching it at home, you caught an incident out of the corner of your eye. And the reason you caught it out of the corner of your eye was it wasn't actually in the centre of play. Mm. It was some distance away from where the ball was. And when the TV then replayed it and focused in, what you saw was two players coming together pretty innocuously, and then Andrew Gaff, the West Coast Eagle player, suddenly and violently throwing a punch at Andrew Brayshaw, clicks him in the jaw, Andrew Brayshaw goes down, and Andrew Gaff runs on.
Is this normal in football, by the way?
When I saw it, the thing that went through my head was, here we go again.
Yeah.
About once a year, once every 2 years, we have an incident of significant on-field violence away from the play. The jargon is behind play. And we have a debate in society about what is the appropriate response. The appropriate response from the people who run the competition, the Australian Football League, and also the appropriate response from the police who enforce the criminal law.
And it wasn't, with that particular game, it's not like instances of violence are very rare. This is a particularly fiery clash that occurs every year between, it's called the Western Derby, between Fremantle and West Coast. So everyone is always on high alert during those matches.
Look, it is a traditional rivalry. It's teams that are battling for turf in the city of Perth. There's a lot of emotion between the spectators, between the officials and between the players. But at the same time, the violence that we saw in this incident is not common. As I said, we have it about once a year, maybe once every 2 years. This is not a common event. Before the AFL tribunal handed down their sentence, this matter was the subject of incredible media, social media commentary. You couldn't turn on talkback radio without hearing about it. Not just sports programs. This was of general concern.
Yeah, there was a lot of talk around our dinner table about it, and we don't even follow the football. Yeah.
And our societal attitudes about violence have changed. We don't accept violence on the street. We've had one punch campaigns. We're talking about violence against women. We're talking about domestic violence. And so this was no longer a discussion about just sporting violence. This was a discussion about violence generally. And I think the AFL tribunal, while they will have said that they applied their rules and according to their systems and they were uninfluenced by external factors, had to have been influenced by community expectations that this was going to get a severe penalty.
Can I just, can you clarify something for me? Because if someone comes along and punches you in the face and breaks your jaw in regular life, that's the subject of criminal prosecution usually, isn't it?
I think we need to distinguish between two questions. Yeah. One is, was this a criminal assault as defined by the law?
Right.
The second question is whether the police should exercise their discretion to investigate and prosecute.
Don't the police prosecute every case of assault?
No, they don't. I mean, the police have limited resources. We only have a certain number of police in a large community. Things are going on all the time. The police do have discretion and they do exercise their discretion as to what they choose to prosecute and what they don't.
So can you explain then? I mean, I know that if you're playing sport and the sport is rough, you're kind of consenting to the fact that it might be a bit dangerous and there could be some injury. But are you consenting to being you know, violently punched in the face.
I'll get to that, like, but if I can go back one step.
Sure.
The first question I mentioned was, is this a criminal assault? The definition of criminal assault is inflicting harm on another person, or indeed grievous bodily harm. Broken jaw in two places, missing teeth, pretty grievous. Grievous bodily harm on another person intentionally or recklessly without lawful excuse. The issue of consent comes into the element of whether there is a lawful excuse.
Mm-hmm.
And consent can constitute a lawful excuse.
Right.
Now, when players run onto the field, they cross the white line, they do consent to contact in the course of the game. Contact within the rules and even contact to common breaches of the rules.
Mm.
We have rules, we have umpires, free kicks are given. We recognise that players are going to overstep the boundaries of the rules and you consent to contact within those boundaries. I think it's then a fair stretch to say that you consent to being hit 20, 30, 40 metres away from the contest by someone in an unexpected situation.
Mm. So as soon as Brayshaw hit the ground, people were already talking about comparisons with this case from 1985. So let's rewind to 85 and see if we can learn some things that we can apply to this particular case.
It's been a good mark, well, taken by Big Greg Deere.
It's going to be a long quarter now, Jack.
So we're back in June 1985. The ball's in the centre of the ground. A player is about to kick it, and we see in the background to the action, Lee Matthews, who you said in the introduction has been voted in numerous polls as the greatest player ever to play. He is standing. Geelong player Neville Bruns is running by. And the best way to describe it is that Lee Matthews gives him a roundhouse right to the face.
Oh, gee. A Geelong player's gone down behind the play.
So
Lee Matthews goes
so
down.
Matthews in the centre.
A Geelong player went down. Matthews is down. There is... Oh, that's going on everywhere here. And Geelong player is still down.
Lester Smith's got someone down there too.
What was surprising and rare in those instances, back in 85, there was only one camera covering the football.
Right.
And it was on the centre wing of the ground, in the centre of the ground. And the odds of it capturing it were rare. But the fact that it did capture it and televised it into the living rooms all around Victoria and eventually all around the country.
Lee Matthews is being led off the ground. He's popped one in the mouth. There's Lee, blood all over his nose. Have a look at it.
That single camera I've been cursing in the lead up to today's episode because I've been trying to find the retaliation punch on Matthews afterwards, which I understand he got absolutely clocked in the face by one of Bruns' teammates straight afterwards, who, in Matthews' term, I think it was spread my nose across my face.
Yes, it's fair to say that Geelong players rush from all directions and Hawthorn players rush from all directions, and it was on for young and old in a way that we don't see today.
So no reports were actually made at the time.
Correct.
But the VFL, now AFL, the VFL at the time did step in afterwards and suspend Matthews for a period of time. What happened there?
Well, the umpire did not report it at the instance. And at that time, there was no video reviews. Mm. There was no someone sitting on the Monday morning reviewing all the footage. If the umpire didn't suspend the person there and then, there was no penalty. But because this got captured by camera and it was seen to be such gross violence, there was a public outroar. And the VFL, as it was at the time, intervened and deregistered Lee Matthews for 4 weeks. They actually stripped him from his player registration and prevented him from playing for 4 weeks.
And then what did the police do following that?
Well, the reason why this case is so extraordinary is the VFL competition, and now the AFL and its predecessor, the VFL, has been going on now for about 110 years. And this is the only incident, one in 110 years, where the Victorian police have intervened to lay charges for an on-field assault at the professional level. I should mention, we might discuss it later, the police do lay charges at suburban and country football. But at the AFL level, this is the only one.
So what happened from there? They pressed charges. What did they actually charge him with?
They charged him with assault causing grievous bodily harm. I mean, this is, you know, broke his jaw. This was a serious assault causing serious injury. We now know the dangers of the one punch.
Mm.
You know, it was a matter of inches or centimetres between a broken jaw and a fatality.
Yeah.
Or a serious brain injury. So the police laid charges. Lee Matthews pled guilty. The footage was there. It's pretty hard to plead not guilty. I think much to his surprise, he got a criminal conviction and a fine for $1,000. And a criminal conviction's a serious issue in terms of it stays on your record and you've got to disclose it if you go for future jobs. So Lee Matthews appealed the conviction. The conviction was overturned and he got a 12-month good behaviour bond in its place.
Well, you said that this is the only case that's come up, but we know that there's been other situations where people have kind of violently clocked someone not in play. Why was it that this case did proceed and that the police acted in this case as opposed to all the other ones when they don't act, you know?
Well, I think luckily I can say that I was only a young man at the time and hadn't studied...
You were a mere child.
Hadn't studied my law at the time. But, you know, talking to people and kind of revisiting old footage, I think it was the fact that it got caught on camera. Lee Matthews was such a role model.
Yeah.
He was, as I said, the greatest footballer of his era, arguably the greatest footballer of all time. And there was this public swell of opinion that because of his role model status and the influence he has on young kids,
something had to be done. Right. Well, can we say the same thing with the recent events here now?
Well, as I said, I mean, I was watching it live on TV. I assume tens of thousands of households were watching it. Kids were watching it. Parents had no opportunity to intervene to shield their kids from this violence. And we know that kids mimic.
Sure.
They're heroes. So I think that's part of the reason we're getting this outcry right now.
You're listening to Just Cases, the backstory to the biggest court cases you've never heard of. Today, on-field assaults. If a sports player punches their opponent during a match, should they be charged with a criminal offence? One of the most notorious incidents in Australian football history could show us the way.
If you split-screen the two punches, 1985 and 2018, do you think Gaff should be charged with assault?
I think the issue is it's an assault. As I said, there's harm, if not grievous bodily harm. To me, consent just doesn't exist in this situation. I think it's been incredibly hard to argue. If it wasn't intentional, it was definitely reckless. He meant to throw a punch. I know he's now arguing I meant to hit him in the chest or I meant to hit him in the shoulder. Well,
I just held my hand out and he ran into it.
So there are very strong parallels. For personally, I think we need to have the conversation. I think the conversation is more valuable than necessarily Gaff being charged. I would like to see the police come out and say, what is the process they go through in looking at this matter? What are the criteria they apply and how they've applied them? And at least then we can have an element of transparency and an element of knowledge. Because, for example, I received a phone call from someone in Warrnambool who said to me that last week a local footballer in Warrnambool had been charged with on-field assault. And they're sitting around the pub in Warrnambool and arguing, asking, why are we subject to the criminal sanctions and police intervention? And the professional footballers who are being paid a squillion aren't. Something's not right here.
So is this a rule of law issue, really?
It absolutely is a rule of law issue. A fundamental underpinning of our society is that we are all equal before the law and the law treats us equally.
Mm.
When you see these instances of violence go unpunished by the criminal law, but you see others being punished, then we have to ask, are AFL footballers above the law?
Let's maybe go into that about this issue of the rule of law and transparency, because there have been calls from some quarters, including another AFL great, Wayne Carey, recently, to say, look, everyone just chill out. We're overreacting. Gaff has got an impeccable record and he didn't mean to cause the harm that he did to Brayshaw. He, you know, saying he's gutted, we've got a feel for this guy. But if we take what Carey said, can we look at whether that would hold up in a court of law? Maybe compare a tribunal situation to a criminal charge of assault and what would occur in a court there?
Well, the issues that Wayne Carey's raising would go to sentence in a criminal court. Is it a first offence? Is the person contrite? Have they sought to make redress with the victim? Are issues that go to sentence? They don't go to whether or not the offence has been committed. And at the risk of maybe being a little bit over-dramatic about it, our jails are full of people who have committed their first offence, who are incredibly regretful and contrite, and who arguably will never do it again.
Mm.
But we put them in jail if they've done the crime.
Do you think then, in that case, it actually could have been this is a Dorothy Dixer, a good opportunity for the police to step in and make an example of a man who's committed a one-punch assault.
Again, I do have a little bit of empathy for Gaff, and I don't want to be out here saying, you know, with pitchfork saying, let's string him up. All I'm saying is the police need to have a conversation with us. Tell us the process they've gone through, the criteria they've employed and how they've applied them. Mm. We can then debate it. The police might go through it and we all might say, oh, yeah, that makes sense. But let's have the discussion.
So you mean they might say, look, there's no reasonable prospect of a successful prosecution here, or there's no sustained conduct that indicates that, or some, you know, there might be some reasons.
I actually don't think they'd say that, because I think if you look at the footage, it's pretty black and white.
Well, in colour. In colour, it's black and white.
It's colour.
There's some people who are saying that Brayshaw ducked.
The punch.
I'm putting it out there to annoy you.
Look, even if he ducked, it's still reckless. The punch was thrown. Yeah, that's reckless. If it's not, we don't know what's going through Gaff's head. Well, I don't. I mean, we've heard what he said. Let's, even if we accept that at face value, it's reckless.
So, is it totally un-Australian to be suggesting that this is subject to police charges? Is this an actual, is this whole conversation out of bounds?
Well, it's interesting you say that, because my article, some of my media commentary got picked up by the media, and I did have some comments directed to me on Twitter saying that I was taking the Australian out of Australia, that I was creating a soft, I was far too soft, and
you're such an unpatriot.
Political correctness gone mad.
But if I want to come back to your earlier comment, Melissa, about why the police don't, I don't think it's because they will have difficulty proving the offence. But as I said, they've got limited resources. Mm-hmm. They've got a discretion. They've got to employ their resources in a manner they think is best for the society as a whole. I think what the police might say is that the AFL has its own disciplinary process. Right. And that a process is appropriate, and the sanction that has been meted out reflects community expectations. Mm-hmm. Gaff has been vilified mm-hmm. in the media mm-hmm. and that he has been punished enough and therefore police should not use their limited resources.
Right.
And that is an argument that we have heard from other law enforcement agencies towards sport generally.
Kind of go to the you get punished once kind of idea.
That's right. That's
And he has been now punished, so there's no need for further punishment. But I guess from a law teacher's point of view and from a legal system point of view, the punishment that comes from the AFL is not actually through the legal system. That's just a internal process, isn't it?
It is, but it does go to the police's discretion. Mm. And I think that's one of the things we forget when we teach the law. We teach the words and the statute. We forget about the apparatus that exists around it that has to apply it and the judgment that has to be applied. I think the question for us as a society is the AFL's disciplinary process reflective of community standards?
Yeah.
Has the punishment fitted the crime? We have had other assaults on Victorian streets and streets in Sydney and Perth where people go to jail and lose their liberty for similar offences.
Mm-hmm.
So that's the conversation we need to have. And again, maybe an aside, I think, for the AFL's perspective, it's the only professional sport that I'm aware of at that level in Australia that doesn't have an immediate sanction for on-field violence. They don't have a red card system. Soccer has a red card system. The NRL has sending off and sin bins. You can be ejected from a basketball match for a flagrant foul. The AFL don't have that. And again, that's a question we as a society have to say whether or not that's appropriate.
Sport is always regarded as being a reflection of the society in which it exists. And could this incident between two young men be similar to the 1995 racial vilification? Is this a moment that sort of crystallises a wider issue in Australian society?
I probably don't think so. I hope it creates a conversation. But what we see is that our attention span's pretty limited. And the issue gets dealt with. It has 48, 72 hours of media. Something else happens and we move on. As I said, when I saw the clip the first time, the first thought to my head was, here we go again. Mm. And here we go again because we've never resolved it the first time. I think what will change is when the police finally lay charges. And if they do lay charges in this instance, then yes, I think it could be a watershed moment. But I think until police cross that Rubicon, lay the charges, I suspect that we'll just be in a bit of a cycle.
Neville Bruns actually was interviewed this week on radio station SEN, and he said, I think that they should hand down a 12-month sentence. That's talking a direct quote, but he's talking about the AFL to suspend Gaff for 12 months. And he says, quote, I really think that's the only way, the best way to get the message out there that anybody who delivers a king hit like that has to get a minimum 12 months of his career, and he can sit on the sidelines and think about it.
And if you think of 12 months for a young person who's in sport, that really is a really serious punishment, because that takes you out of the whole, the training loop, the, you know, the network.
Again, that's Neville Brunt, obviously not necessarily the most neutral and impartial person, having been the victim of Lee Matthews, but that's the conversation we have to say. What is an appropriate sanction? Even, let me do just another comparator. I can't remember the exact number, but 20-odd Essendon footballers were put out of the game for a year for unknowingly taking a substance which their club directed them to take. And society has said that a 12-month suspension is adequate. Breaking someone's jaw, displacing several teeth, 8 weeks. I'll let people listening to this be the judge on that one.
So let me take you back to the 1985 case. Where are those protagonists today?
I'm not exactly sure what Neville Bruns is doing today. He did make some media commentary on the Gaff incident. Lee Matthews, however, is potentially the most celebrated and acknowledged as the greatest footballer ever. He has a statue outside the MCG. The fact that he engaged in this gross act of violence has not in any way diminished his career or diminished his popularity. The other thing also is that Lee Matthews earned the moniker Lethal Lee. This was not the, Neville Bruns was not the only person to find his face at the end of Lee Matthews' fist.
Including a goalpost, I hear, as well.
He broke a goalpost once. But yeah, you know, it means that the AFL still celebrates the violence inherent in the sport. It is an incredibly combative sport. It involves players moving at great speed, at great energy, hitting each other with great force. And that's what we love. That's what the spectators love. That's what the sponsors want. That's what the broadcasters want. And in no way am I saying we should engineer it out of the game. But we also celebrate the violence. And that, in a sense, again, may be the AFL not playing catch up with the rest of the society. Society has had the conversation about violence in society. We have said that the one punch is gone. We've said the biffo in the pub is gone. Coming home with a you know, gut full of beer and taking it out on your wife, that's gone. I think the AFL's got a bit of catch up to play.
Eric Winholtz, thank you very much for speaking to Just Cases today.
That's a pleasure.
We love hearing from you, our listeners, so if you like Just Cases, please leave us a review wherever you listen to us and drop us a story suggestion via Twitter. Our handle is Just Cases Show. That's all one word.
Also, if you're a footy fan, make sure you check out The Outer Sanctum. It's a great podcast from the ABC about AFL and AFLW, and it's done a little differently. It's an all-female podcast featuring six passionate footy fans, including our very own Dr. Kate Sear from Monash Law, who did a really great Just Cases episode with us about drugs. That's in episode 4 of Just Cases. They don't teach you this at law school.
Catch you next time.